And I have a friend, his name is Steve Brickman. He used to write for the Springfield News Leader, a weekly horse article there. And then he wrote for like the Texas Trophy Hunter and a bunch of other stuff. And so he'd done some articles in the past. And so he came up for the opening weekend of duck season. We get up that first morning and we're all excited. And he's like, hey, man, he's like, where's the coffee? And I looked at him and I go, I don't drink coffee. And I remember this just so vivid. He grabbed me by the arm and goes, dude, it ain't about you. And literally that changed everything. Like, of course, after the morning hunt, I went and got coffee pots. And hey, guys, my name is Brad Ganaway. I'm the owner of Pro Outfitters, and you guys are listening to the Ozark Tradition Podcast.
Ozark Traditions and the Great Outdoors.
Welcome to Ozark Traditions TV Podcast, a place where outdoor topics are discussed. Now sit back as today's host brings you the outdoors inside.
Ozark Traditions in the Great Outdoors.
All right, guys, welcome back to another one. This is the Ozark Traditions TV Podcast. I'm TJ. I'm here with Matt and Justin. I did that pretty good that time, just not like bad. Always. And today, special guest is good friend of me and Matt's and fixing to be good friend of everybody else's, Brad Ganaway with Pro Outfitters. So, Brad, thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule. I know you're a wild man, so to get you on here was fun.
Yeah, well, I am busy, but we're just now starting to get ramped up. Since it's August, it's like that we can finally see the backside of summer and hunting season is about here, so...
Oh,
excited for hunting season and excited to talk hunting or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I have a feeling we're probably going to talk about some hunting. But, you know, we've done it all. We've went from starting to talk about hunting to rap music, and then we'll end up in politics somehow and come back to deer hunting. It's just, you never know where it's going to go. But if anybody's wanting to know, I'll let Brad kind of explain more about himself. But he's the owner of Pro Outfitters, which is an outfitter that we've went hunting with a couple times up in Rulo, Nebraska. Now, you got, do you still do anything down in Arkansas, or do you guys just pretty much just...
We don't. We pretty much just stay up there. So we mainly do, you know, like we're at in southeast Nebraska. So we mainly do Missouri, Kansas, and Nebraska, that one lodge in Nebraska. And then we do deer, turkey, duck, and geese. And to be honest with you, our lodge is so big now and we've grown so much that trying to do stuff in Arkansas, it's just almost overwhelming. The lodge sleeps 32, so a lot of times during snow goose season and duck season, we're full. And then just the logistics of that many people coming in every 3 days is really quite quite a production. We're trying. We hired a girl that's going to do some filming for us and pictures because I tell people this. I've done this for 20 years, so to me, it's kind of old hat. But I think some people that come in, just the behind the scenes of new clients every 3 days and the relationships you meet with them and then the logistics of getting ready for the next group. We're trying to show a little more backside of that this fall. So, you know, hopefully maybe we'll come back on a podcast in the spring and tell some crazy stories and
Of
you guys being there and some things that have happened throughout the fall. So,
well, like I said, we're going to be there in February or March. We're going to be there in March.
Well, I guess some of our group's going to be there in December.
Yeah, I think Mikey's going to come up and go on a duck hunt. And then me and Matt.
I'm not going to be there. I'm going to be taking my Coast Guard test for my captain's license.
So Matt's getting his captain's license because he's going to go full-time guiding. He's just going to quit his job and everything, guiding fishing trips down here.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
awesome.
He just bought a new boat, so he's got to go get his captain's license and all that so we can get all that legit. But, all right, so back to Brad here. So what Brad does, first of all, he's an awesome guy. I mean, he's just fun. You guys' lodge is amazing. I mean, the first year we went up there, you guys were still kind of working on it.
Yeah.
It's a work in progress.
And last year when we went, it was just awesome. And I'm going to tell you right now, guys, even if the hunting's no good,
it's still a good time.
You're going to eat like you've never ate in your life. I'm telling you right now, they've got some, I don't know, Mel and them back there cooking, whatever they got going on. It is some of the best food. And it's almost always like venison, like, or some kind of wild game.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all, you know, so I'm 45 now, so every pound is tougher to get off. and it's all carbs. So like after the season, it's crazy. I tell my wife, so they go, I spend 6 months trying to lose 20 pounds so I can go back to the lodge and gain it right back. Yeah. This is a stupid, vicious cycle, but the food is so good. I can't just, I say that every year, like, you know, this year I'm going to cut back. Like, I'm going to have some of my own food and my own shakes and eat healthy. And then you get up there and you smell the bacon and there's all the desserts and stuff. And it's like, how are you going to pass that up? You really can't.
So that's the thing, people. Like, you're thinking, oh, well, you'll get, like, supper. No. When you wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning, there is a full course breakfast waiting for you.
And actually, so what I'm one of those people that I hate to use the term that like it's never good enough. It really is, but we try and up the game. And so we sat down after the season, like, how can we be better? And so that's kind of everything is a focus, but we start with picking on things like in the lodge, like how can we, you know, make the beds better or the sheets or whatever. And that was one of the things with the food, because we'd have a lot of clients that have been there for years. It's like, you know, we need to mix the menu up. So Amy's been working a lot this summer on just doing some different things, not drastic things, but like, you guys have been there, like on the Taco Tuesdays, adding some fajitas, and we're doing like cheese enchiladas and just kind of adding some different wrinkles into it. And then she's been making all these desserts, like these, I don't know, like these pizza fruit dessert deals and all kinds of stuff, and taking pictures. And so I'm excited about that, because we have a kind of a change in the menu a little bit.
And you guys got the smoker up and going now too, right?
Yeah, we got the smoker that we've been trying to do, which Shank's been doing all that. Here's the beauty of, I've done this for 20 years, and when I got started, had to do it all. I don't cook anything. Everybody, I'm like, I don't know. I've never even used a smoker. I wouldn't know the first thing about it. So I guess when you've done it for this long, you need time to delegate and let other people do that. And all those are phenomenal. So they would do a much better job than I could do anyway. So.
Well, I can tell you right now from experience, Shank's got that thing figured out. Because
he does. Yeah, he's a phenomenal cook. And honestly, I tell people this, we just have such a great staff. It's like a melting pot, you know. You've been there, and Convict and Grinder and all, and everybody has a nickname. Just to throw that out. So everybody has a nickname, and everybody is different. And that, honestly, it's like a melting pot of just all these different personalities that, to tell you the truth, as an owner of a guide service, you guys are a lot of fun, and we could put your group with anybody. Mm-hmm. But you kind of need to have some guides that can flip the switch and be more serious, with certain groups, and then others that can cut up. So we have a lot of guys that can just play versatility with different groups, and then certain guys that are just, you know, a nut and cut up all the time, that when a group comes in, it's like, yeah, man, I'm 45 now and I want to be fun, but I'm not. Yeah. Convict, I'm putting you with them because they're 25.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Well, and you're talking about Convict and Grinder, these two guys, which we got the hunt with Zach. Connor, we didn't get to hunt, but we hung out with both of them. And these guys are amazing, these two guides, because not only are they awesome waterfowl guides, they're like bullfight riders and bronc riders and bullfighters. Like, these guys are just, like, that's what they've been doing all summer.
Yeah.
It is amazing what them two, they're living the life, man. Like, you know, they just, it's insane what them two have got going on. Like, it's... I'm peanut butter and jelly is what I am, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. And with that, you know, we hear in today's society that, like, the younger generation, they don't want to work hard and they're not dedicated and they're flaky and all that. Man, I guess I've been blessed, because I have a lot of younger guys, and we've hired a couple more. They're just flat go-getters. They love the outdoors. They grew up in the country. They're not scared to, you know, to work hard and stuff. So, and you need that. I mean, I'm gonna be 46, so I'm no fresh chicken anymore. And those young guys make me feel young too, because I'll like the other day, my son got in the truck and he goes, "What do you listen to?" I go, "I'm listening to some new rap, Grayson." I mean, I got to keep up with the times for the young guys. So they do kind of keep you young and kind of. I wouldn't say I'm by no means hip, but they make it fun for sure. They make it a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, well, you hit it right on the head there when you said they grew up in the country, and I think that is a big factor into, you know, you talk about kids that don't want to work anymore. A lot of them didn't grow up the way we did.
Right.
And I'm not saying that that's not right. You know, you don't have to be a country boy to be worth a dang. But
it does help.
Exactly. It helps.
It helps a lot, for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So we'll get back to the meat and potatoes. People want to know what this Pro Outfitter is. You guys specialize pretty much in waterfowl and deer hunting and turkey hunting. I mean, those are your three.
Yep.
The three deals. So if you want to go kill a turkey, Brad's your man. if you want
to
go shoot.
Well, especially this year, because this is my 20th year. And I think when I do podcasts or people, you know, we've done a bunch of stories where people ask, you know, well, what's the coolest thing? I'm like, well, I look back now, like, I'm very proud of the fact that we've been in business and have been growing for 20 years. That's something that I'm very proud of, just the fact that, like, it's tough. The hunting industry is like anything. You're constantly trying to up your game, and you're trying to make sure you're taking care of your clients and growing and all that. And for us to do it for 20 years is pretty special. So we can't wait for our clients to come this year, because we have cool things planned, you know, to celebrate our 20th year, which for us is just, you know, just been an amazing journey from a little bitty lodge when it was just me and, you know, buddies I could find that would come up to guide on the weekend. So we made a post on our page yesterday, and I was like, we have 17 people that, you know, guide for us throughout the year and help make all this happen. And it just takes now just a lot of moving pieces and a lot of people to make, you know, to make it all flow. And so many of them just are, you know, I couldn't even begin to give them enough credit for all the behind the scenes stuff. And I think that's what makes it so amazing, is that to get 15, 16, 17 people that have from all different parts of walks of life, and then all have the same common goal. Like, I don't have anybody that's selfish that needs the spotlight. They're all just about the team, the true team, and not just about, you know, in our culture now, it's like me. And I'm blessed to have people that are just willing to do whatever it takes, you know, for the clients to have fun and to have a good time. So I'm very blessed.
Yeah,
you know,
well, from that end. I mean, like you said, you've been in business for 20 years. That right there goes to show, first of all, you know what you're doing. Because anybody that's not any good at something is not going to be in business for 20 years. People are going to stop. You might be able to scam people over for a couple of years, you know.
Right.
Right, yep.
And
yep.
Then that'll be the end of you, you know. And you know what? Guiding, I don't know how you do it, honestly, because not everybody is like we are. You know, we get down there. Right, yep. We don't care if we – I think we shot three geese last time, but it was because we got there, it went from like 65 degrees. These guys was killing 30, 40 birds a day, easy. And then we go – the day we leave, they get 4.5 inches of snow,
yeah,
and it's 10 degrees out. Like, we didn't even hunt that Thursday morning. It was like -2.
Yeah.
We had a blast, you know what? I mean, and couldn't wait to go back this year. I mean,
most of our party would have had a hard time getting up in the morning.
Right.
Anyways.
Yeah, it worked out, you know. A lot of them got poisoned the night before, but, right, you know, and that's another great thing about the lodge. The view over there, you get up in the morning, you're sitting right on the river. And when I say right on the river, if you had a Nebraska fishing license, you could probably fish off the deck.
Yeah.
Yeah, you definitely could.
But, there was no shortage of geese. I mean, you guys, as far as the snow geese go, you guys are right in the thick of it right there. I mean, it's just, but anybody who's ever hunted a snow goose knows that it's probably the hardest thing, honestly, to hunt, in my opinion, that I've hunted. And I haven't hunted a whole lot of different species. But like deer, the deer don't migrate, you know. You can kind of, these things, they're here one day, gone the next. And I mean, that's just, and then they'll be here, and then they're just nothing to do with you. Because a lot of people don't understand, some of these geese are 20, 25 years old. They've seen it all,
you know,
man.
You've been there, and we do the orientation, and we tell people that, like, you know, what are realistic expectations. And Mel does a really good job when, you know, people call and book a hunt. You know, here's the numbers, here's what you should expect. But there's just this myth about snow geese, and some of that was true 20 years ago, is the fact that, man, they're easy to kill. Like, they're just everywhere, so they're a nuisance and they're dumb. And the reality is, any bird that, you know, migrates, and has been doing that for 20 years, they've seen everything. They've seen every spread in the world. So it has continuously gotten tougher over the, you know, 20 years. I can remember back when we first started and doing, like, with the old Texas rags and even just, like, trash bags, and we could consistently kill 30 or 40 birds a day just on a bad day, and that was about everyone was doing that. And now, I mean, it's changed dramatically to, you know, we don't get a whole lot of 100 to 150 bird days like we used to. I think the best was 87 this year. We had numerous
in 2 days before 80s. We got there.
yeah. We've had numerous in the 80s and 60s and 50s. But it's just so much tougher, just because your target is the juvies and the young birds that haven't seen the migration, haven't seen the big spreads and stuff. And it's just become continuously tougher to kill. But I think as I've done it, everybody asks me, like, what's your favorite thing to guide? And I wouldn't have said this 10 years ago, but the snow geese. They're just, when the tornado of snow geese is coming down, there's just something so dramatic and so cool about it. And I say that with the fact that, like, you always have 6 or 8 guys with you, because we do a little bigger groups than we do with duck hunting. Right. And just, you can just feel the guys' excitement, and you get one volley. It's kind of like if you're a golfer, it's like you get that one shot. It's like, I think I might play another round tomorrow.
Yeah, you know? Well, it's all worth it. You know, you finally get, you know, you hunt for 3 days, and one of those days you get a tornado and you kill 50 birds out of it, and it's like, it was worth it. And when I say kill 50 birds, people, there's no bag limits, no plugs. Like, it's awesome.
Right.
I mean, there's guys that are taking some wild shotguns up there and doing this stuff with. I mean, me and Matt's both got the extension tubes that hold, you know, 12, 13 shots. I mean, it's a lot of fun. It's, you know, we've been on, our best hunt was actually with you the first year we went with you in Arkansas.
Yeah.
And it was miserable that day. I mean, it was sleeting and raining, but we set her out as best we could, and it was real foggy. So the birds couldn't see us. They could just hear us. Well, it worked out perfect, because by the time they got below the fog, it was over. Like, we were shooting.
It was over.
And, you know, and we're like, man, we can't wait to go back. Well, we didn't get to go back with you for, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks. We just got back with Brad last year, and right. I don't know what we were doing all these years.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, last year we had a lot of birds. It just, you know,
TJ, are those pit blinds, are they comfortable?
They're very nice.
Man, I like those.
That's kind of a game changer too.
Yes.
Speaking of like the snow goose part of it, of, you know, laying in fields, there's nothing wrong with that, and you want the options. But being in a pit blind when it's miserable and the days you're like, hey guys, if we can kill 10 birds today, we're going to be doing really great. And you're like, man, 10 birds laying in a field with 4 inches of snow when it's 5 degrees is rough. But when you're in a pit, you're like, oh yeah, man, I can sit here.
No problem.
No problem at all.
Yeah, so, if it's cold, you just take a little buddy heater in there, and it'll about run you out of there. You know, it's just neat, because because I'm a big waterfowl hunter. I know how important it is to hold still and stay hid. Well, you're talking 6-8 guys in these things that you can hide from 200-300 eyeballs if you've got a small flock. You know, you can't hardly do that in a layout. I know it's really tough in layout blinds to hide that many people. Because these, like we said, these things have seen everything.
Yeah. It's almost the opposite. If you tell them that, you know, to get down, they get up. So if they get up, they want to get down. And it is, if you have a waterfowl hunter, to be in a layout blind and not try and peek, so to speak, is really tough, because it's just not natural. They hear the birds and know they're getting close, and you're like, all right, get ready. Your natural action is like,
to start
peeking, like, well, where are they exactly at? But if you waterfowl hunted enough, then you know how concealment, how important that is. And speaking of like the lodge and stuff, that's one of the reasons why I love snow geese so much, because everybody will be like, man, I'm surprised not deer hunting. And I love deer hunting and I love guiding, but the lodge is completely individualized. So everyone is there for a different reason, as in what they're after. So one guy just saw the biggest deer of his life and killed the biggest deer of his life. One guy maybe missed the biggest deer of his life, and the other guy hasn't seen anything, and the other guy that hasn't seen anything, maybe the best hunter in the group. It's just the way it goes. So there's all these waves of emotion. And for some people, it's like, well, they gar-holed me because I didn't see anything. Well, he's known TJ longer. That's why he put TJ in that spot.
Right.
We're on a snow goose hunt. It's like, I tell guys, you know, if we suck, we all suck together.
Right.
So
we're
all in this together. And then when guys, I think the other benefit too, when I tell people this, they're like, I'm like, if you're going to book any hunt, especially like a waterfowl hunt, find an outfitter that he actually guides, not all the time, but the majority of the time, because you do earn the client's respect. So, like, when I was guiding and you guys were, you know, clients and come in, like, dude, that sucked. I'm like, yeah, man, I know. We killed one bird today, too, and I laid out in the cold just like you do.
Well,
and then the clients kind of look at you and shake your head like, yep, you're right.
Well, what I really appreciated about you, Brad, was the first year we come up there, we went on a duck hunt with you. Mm-hmm. And you called me about a week before, and you're like, dude, it sucks up here. He's like, we'd love to have you, and you never know. But he's like, I'm going to be real honest, it sucks. And I'm like, well, we've already took off work and everything, and we're just wanting a guy's trip anyway. So we went up there and hunted, and we shot one duck.
Right.
But we had a great time. But you didn't lie to me just to get me up there. You were like, dude, like I said, I'm a waterfowl hunter, and I know how it goes. I can go to a hole and kill 3-man limit of birds one day, call up all my buddies and like, man, we got to get 10 guys in here. We're going to hammer them, get up there and not take the safety off the next day. I mean, that's just, they are so day by day that it's not even funny. And with the snow geese, a lot of people, okay, so like ducks, you want cold weather, you want snow. A little bit of ice always helps if you've got ice eaters and stuff. Snow geese, it's like you want it to be like spring crappie season.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You want it to be 60 degrees in March. Yeah. And you only get like five or six of those days in March.
Yeah.
But if you get them, it can be lights out.
Well, and everybody thinks, okay, it's a snow goose. Right. So they love the snow, and you're going to want the nasty weather, and you're exactly right. You know, that in the spring, south wind, sunny and 60 is like, oh, they're migrating and this is going to be money. Or we've even had it warmer than that where guys like, oh, I saw the forecast and it's 35 and blowing snow and north wind 50 miles an hour. How do you think we're going to do? I'm like, it's going to suck.
We're probably not going to see anything.
right. So yeah, it's amazing the difference. And when you're speaking of, you know, years, like when you guys came a couple years ago, I wish I had the foresight and, you know, it's always one of those like, man, I wish I could go back and tell myself, you know, I wish I knew then what I know now. And that's one of the things I had to learn the hard way. And a lot of that was the financial burden back then of calling guys and being like, hey, man, like, we don't have ducks. You don't need to come. And what I found out was when I was honest with guys, I'm like, hey, man, I know you guys are going to pay to hunt, but it sucks. And I want to be honest. That only makes guys want to come. So the fact, like, man, if you're willing to call me and tell me that, you know, the duck hunting sucks, I want to come support you. Where before, when guys would get there, I'd be like, well, how's the hunting? Well, it's not that great, but, you know, it's going to get better. And maybe I didn't really lie, but I was like, I knew it wasn't going to get much better. And then they come, and easily you guys could drive to the refuge or go to the gas station, meet a local, and he's like, oh, man, I can't believe you guys are here hunting. I mean, it absolutely sucks. And you're like, yeah, well, we called Brad, and he told us that. Or the flip side, you meet someone, and I didn't tell you that, and you're like, hey, how's the hunting? And they're like, man, this has been the worst 2 weeks of hunting I've ever seen, and it's not going to get any better. So I found I wish I knew then what I know now, just from the fact that it didn't make any sense for me to, you know, to tell everybody that, because I'd be like, well, crap, I'm going to lose money. Well, the reality is most guys are like, I can't believe you're being this honest with me, and makes me want to come no matter what. So I learned the hard way on some of that stuff, and I tell people that at least I was smart enough at the time to learn from my mistake, and we grew from that. Now, with that, some guys who've been burnt will call them and tell them that, and they'll be like, oh, so you're trying to put some guys in our spot. And no, man, we don't do that. Like, that's just, we don't have to do that. So I think if you don't know us and an outfitter calls like, hey, it's not very good, like, you might look at rescheduling. Some people think that is like, oh, he's won, which I have done that in the past. He's overbooked, or two, he's already got my money. So if he can slide six more guys in there, then he's kind of double dipping. That's not the case. And honestly, most outfitters, that's not the way they operate at all. They know that if you can get on a good hunt, one, that's their job. And two, if you take care of them, you really have, I mean, you hopefully have customers, you know, forever. And that's kind of what we did when we moved into the new lodge. And I sat down, I was like, okay, I went from a lodge that had 12 people to 32. How in the heck am I going to fill this place? And really, we got to where I didn't do this as much in the early years. We focused on the clients we had. So I made it a point that when you guys know this, when someone walked in, I greeted them, I remembered them, and I knew their name. I was like, if I'm going to grow to this number, I can't have people at the lodge that you don't know at all and that you're not investing any of your time when they're investing their hard-earned money. And when we tell people, like, yeah, occasionally we'll do like a little Facebook advertising. We start to do a few trade shows, but as like having this huge marketing budget that we just throw money to, we honestly rely on our clients like you guys. Just somebody that knows you guys, and I pass this all to Melk, she does, book some duck hunts this week from knowing you guys.
Yeah,
and that's honestly how we do our business. And then we're very thankful of the guys that do that. Instead of like maybe some businesses, like, there's always more clients. It's not going to matter. I think the older that I get and I appreciate it more, that I kind of had this philosophy, like, let's focus on the client, not the numbers. It doesn't matter how many hunters we have. Though it's not how many numbers. Like, you know, we have 32 hunters. We have 32 friends and family that hopefully are going to leave here, and they're going to go spread the word. And honestly, when we started doing that, it's like the floodgates opened. It was completely different. And we sent out a poll to our clients, like asked them, like, what would you want to see? And so going back to you've done it for 20 years, I don't think that anything that I have done in the past is that exciting, or that clients really want to hang out with me. And when we started asking them, they're like, man, we just like to, you know, talk to Brad more. We like to see the guide more in the lodge. And what was important to us, as in, and still in my mind, because I'm old school, like, all we got to do is go kill shit. Like, we just want to kill stuff. If we're not killing anything, it doesn't matter. And then I started putting myself in their shoes, like you guys were saying, and being like, well, the camaraderie, hanging out, the friends, the fellowship means way more than I ever imagined. And I was kind of scratching my head. I'm like, man, I can't imagine these guys want to come back and they kill three birds. But I think, one, the more outside of the hunt you see how real we are and how passionate we are and how, you know, we're just normal guys that get to do something that we love. I think people gravitate towards that. So they understand, like, when I do an orientation and tell everybody, like, man, I'm beyond blessed for you guys to be here. And I truly wake up every day and be like, dude, after 20 years, I seriously still get to do this? I think people feel that energy, not only for myself, but everyone who, you know, works for me. It's not just like, well, I mean, we care that you guys are here, but we're kind of worried about the next group that's coming in because they may be blah, 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 blah. We try and treat everyone equal, and we truly do try and invest in them and not just like the number. And I think that was a huge fear of mine, is like, we're going to get to a point that I don't know all the clients and I'm not even going to feel connected to them. And I think that we reinvested that and made our clients feel like, man, we say this and it's true. Like, if you come hunt with us, you are part of the Pro Outfitters family. And that's not like something that we, you know, take lightly, as in, we don't put it that way. Like, you're part of our family, you need to book us hunts. Like, you're part of our family. Like, we care about you. Like, it's more than just, you know, just a number. Like, we focus on the people and not the numbers. And that's really, once again, like a lot of things, I wish I would have known about 20 years ago, but it took me about 15 years to kind of figure that part out. But at least I did at some point anyways.
Yeah. And that's why people are coming back. Yeah. That's why you've been in business for 20 years is that, because it's they're wild animals, people. And, you know, I think people get the wrong idea about going on with an outfitter and a guided hunt. Like, it's some kind of 100% guaranteed thing too. Like, they don't understand that you guys, they're wild animals you're hunting. You can't control everything. You can put them in the best situation you possibly can, put them in a nice lodge, get them in a nice hunting area, leases for your deer and your turkeys and blinds and stuff. That's what you're, but it's, you can't make the birds do nothing, and you can't make the deer show up, and you can't make the turkeys gobble. I mean, that's just, now you guys are pretty successful with your turkey hunts. I mean, you guys got some real good turkey hunting up there, I know.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, yeah. Anything, you know, you guys know, because you hunt waterfowl, anything that migrates is just very tough. It's, you know, here today, you know, gone tomorrow. So if you have good equipment, good leases, everything's comfortable, and we've tried to fine-tune, as in the organizational part of it. When you guys check in, someone's there to check you in and show you where you're supposed to go and what time dinner is and an orientation and all those kind of deals that have people thinking, like, you know, it's better than it was the year before. And we finish up the end of May, and after 20 years, by May, the end of May, I'm kind of gassed. I mean, because I'm just one of those guys, if I'm going to be in it, I'm giving my all. And usually from about Memorial Day, Memorial weekend, to after the 4th of July, I try not to think about hunting much at all. I try and go on vacation and all that. And then usually after the 4th of July, we kind of get back in the groove, and we constantly brainstorm of like, okay, so what are we going to do to be better? And honestly, most of the times that we're talking about is the minimal things. Like, we're adding a spec spread this year, and we've added putting in a new pit that we're putting in a dry cornfield, and some organizational things that will make things, you know, flow better. Because I want guys to come back and be like, man, you got all new comforters, you got new sheets, you got a new piece of equipment. Well, now, like this year, oh, you've hired a full-time cleaning lady that comes in and deep cleans every day. Oh, you've hired a camera person. Do people on the flip side, see that I'm spending my money with them, but man, every year they just keep upping the game, just trying to get, you know, get better. And I think in the ways that kind of matter, I don't want to use the word smoke and mirrors, but kind of a lot of things, like, you know, you want the deer hunters to come in and be like, oh, they got new blinds and got new stands, but then it's like, oh, they've upped their cooking game, and, you know, they have a full-time cleaning lady, and all the stuff that sometimes, even though I consider myself old, I just love to hunt. Like, that's all I want to do. Like, to be honest, I don't care much about the lodge part of it and the food. I sleep in my truck and eat a ham sandwich to kill a bunch of snow geese, turkey, yeah, ducks here. But I've had to put myself in the client's place and be like, all right, it's not about what I want. It's about what they want. And I'll tell you one, like, old school story from back in the day. So, like, my second year, it was the opening weekend of duck season, and I had just got my first lodge, and I mean, I paid like $40,000 for it. I mean, it was a dump. And I have a friend, his name is Steve Brigman. He used to write for the Springfield News Leader, a weekly horse article there, and then he wrote for like the Texas Trophy Hunter and a bunch of other stuff. And so he'd done some articles in the past. And so he came up for the opening weekend of duck season. We get up that first morning and we're all excited, and he's like, hey man, he's like, where's the coffee? And I looked at him and go, I don't drink coffee. And I remember this just so vivid. He grabbed me by the arm and goes, dude, it ain't about you. And literally that changed everything. Like, of course, after the morning hunt, I went and got coffee pots, and, you know, we still now, you know, that's like the first thing I do is get the coffee going, or Amy gets coffee going in the morning. And so my point with that is, like, some of the things that I don't think, like, I don't care about Wi-Fi, and I don't care about a lot of things, but all those things, the little things add up to a client. Like, that might be on, he might be hunting, but he might have to do a conference call in the afternoon. So having Wi-Fi might be the difference of him, like, man, I'd love to come, but I look at those dates and I have to do a conference call, you know, in the afternoon, and you don't have Wi-Fi, or whatever the case may be. Like, when we had bunk beds, oh, so do you guys have bunk beds? No, we don't have those. So it kind of became all these little pieces of the puzzle that you put together, that in the end you're looking at, it's like, all right, so this all makes sense, where someone would come, and you guys know, because we have a ladies' restroom. And I didn't want to eliminate anyone. I didn't want a dad to call me and be like, man, I want to bring my daughter up on a duck hunt. How's the bathroom situation? And be like, yeah, we got a shower house. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
Like, oh, no, no, no.
Yeah.
We have a private bathroom for your daughter, and here's a room that we'll have just for you. But we try to, I say I, not me, but the whole team, tried to think of all different scenarios that we wouldn't be eliminating anybody. They'd be like, you know, oh, okay, so, oh, you know, for football. Oh, yeah, well, I never get to watch Sunday football. I never get to watch the Chiefs on Sunday afternoon because my wife has me doing this. And that'd be like, yep, we have the NFL Network. I mean, we got, you know, all the games. And I know, like, for me, I'm like, are you crazy? Like, it's Sunday of rifle season, and you're not going to deer hunt because you're going to watch
football
Minnesota
game.
Vikings or... Yeah, or the Bears or whoever. But for that guy, those 5 days might be the only time he can get away. And he wants to hunt. But for him just to sit with his buddies and have a few beers and watch a game is important to him.
Yep.
So I had to figure out, like, what's important to me and what's important to them, you know, maybe completely different. And like the food deal, I've been on enough hunts to where I felt like, gosh, man, they just make sure that everyone just has enough to just, like, kind of fill you up. You guys know, like, they'll be like, hey, do you think we have enough food? If you think, don't ask me if you think. If you think we don't have enough, I want more. And I know that everybody that leaves there is, you know, probably gained 5 pounds and would probably throw some away. But yeah. I wanted them to feel like they were, if they wanted to just sit down for the weekend and plow through food, because if they did that at home, you know, their wife might be on their butt or whatever. We try to make sure that not over the top, but try and make it as over the top as possible in all the ways outside of hunting too, that because we know, I always say that, you know, we can control the atmosphere. We can't control the hunting. So if you're trying to think of all the ways, from the Wi-Fi and the bar, and, you know, we've added the dart boards and we bought a skeet thrower now. So, like, when it's slow, we can shoot skeet. Just, we try to think of everything, to every possible situation, to where when someone would be like, hey man, did you think about this? Did you think about this? That was like our mudroom of wanting something that's big enough that if guys brought their dogs to hang all their stuff. So it's a quite complex like idea that we sit around and brainstorm about on stuff, and it would almost be, I kind of wish sometimes, like, I wish someone could hear like a 46-year-old guy's ideas on stuff, and then, you know, Grinder and Convict and those guys, some of the things that they throw out there, and I'm like, man, we can't do that. But then here's where, here's, and so I'm you would never think this, but I'm actually kind of a deep thinker. So I'll come back to him and I'll be like, yeah. Like, for instance, we've never done Snapchat. I'm like, that is the stupidest thing. And so then I start asking, and I'm a researcher, so I start asking around. I'm like, any boss, you present me this idea. I'm like, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard of. Then, so I start asking dads, their friends, like, do your boys have Snapchat? Yeah, they all do. And I ask my son, I'm like, how do you guys communicate? Every dad, everybody communicates with Snapchat. And I'm like, okay. So now these kids are getting older, and their dad may ask them, like, hey, where'd you like to go on your senior trip? Where do you want to go hunting? Oh, man, I saw this video on Snapchat. That's where we need to go. So from an old guy's standpoint, it's like, we need to invest more in Google. We need to invest more in Instagram and Facebook. You know, it's the young guys have helped open my eyes up and opportunities of things that I probably think are absolutely stupid, but some of the things that they think of are like, I'm not going to really give you credit for it, but it kind of does make sense. But I think that's the hardest thing that we've tried to be in business is not complacent. I keep on thinking like we've grown at an insane amount every year. And I keep on thinking that like we're going to make, and I hope that we don't, but I think a lot of that is we come back every summer and try to be creative and think it's new things that we can do, not gimmicks and stuff, new things that we can reach new clients, as in like Snapchat. I still think it's a crazy idea, but I do understand with the younger generation, I do understand that some kids see Russell dancing on the bar and think, I want to go hunt there, or, you know, or whatever may be going on. And so you're trying not to be complacent in that way. And from an old guy being, this is what we've always done, so this is what we always need to do. The same way with the food and coffee and everything else is trying to always kind of think, you know, a little bit, try and be a little bit ahead of the game, which is honestly, I tell people this, like, the before the season and the pre-work and the pre-season work is really my favorite time. Because, like, now I tell people, like, the haze is a bar. You guys know, because you guys are country boys. Mm-hmm. Like, we know what the season's going to be. We got our leases. We planned everything out. We have one more pit to put in the ground. We strategized everything. So that's what we do all the time, because it's funny. I'll be in town, everybody's like, man, you're off all summer, so what do you do? And I'm like, I work every day. What do you do? I mean, so they think that if you're not physically out killing something, that, like, you're not working. And we spend countless hours of brainstorming and then chewing on pieces and spitting it out and spinning it and evolving and thinking, you know, what we need to do to be better, and then trying to implement those and then watching some of those, you know, prosper and be phenomenal, and some of those being like, yeah, well, that didn't go like we thought, but at least we tried.
Right. Well, we're going to talk about this Russell character here in just a second. We're going to take us a quick break, and then we're going to come back, and you guys are going to enjoy this one. He's pretty good guy. So we'll be right back.
Hi, folks. This is Matt Smith of Ozark Traditions TV. I hope you are enjoying this OTTV podcast. When you're not listening to the team members discuss hunting strategies and telling stories, you can go to our YouTube channel and watch your favorite episodes there. And while you're on the web, head on over to our Facebook page and give us a like. Thanks for listening to this week's OTTV podcast. Hunting with my family.
Who could ask for more? Hey guys, my name is Brad Ganaway. I'm the owner of Pro Outfitters, and you guys are listening to the Ozark Tradition Podcast.
All right, guys, welcome back. So, before we left for the break, Brad brought up a guy named Russell. And if you don't follow Pro Outfitters at all or anything, you're not going to have a clue what we're talking about, but you're fixing to find out. So, Brad, kind of let us know. First of all, I want to know how did it come about?
Oh, okay, well, here's the business side of me. Like, at the lodge, you're responsible for however many people, 25, 30 people, and all your clients and guides and everyone. So you kind of have to be professional and, you know, and you have to be serious all the time, which if you personally know me outside of that, I'm nothing like that. Yeah. Like I'm my kids, I'm always cutting up and doing stupid stuff. So we were actually at a show in Harrisburg like 2 or 3 years ago, and it was Amy and Mel, and we had a couple of buddies that were there, and we were talking about stuff, and someone had walked in that kind of just looked like, you know, kind of a snow country boy, kind of redneck, and was acting kind of squirrely, and Mel's like, man, that's you. I go, yeah, it kind of is me. She's like, and she kind of thought of it. She's like, you that should be like your alter ego. Like, that's really how you act, but clients don't get to see that. And I'm like, you think? And she's like, oh, yeah. So that's kind of where it came from. Now, the funny thing is that, like, I don't get to do it as much as I'd like because we're just so stinking busy. But I really, you know, like, I don't break character. So, like, Russell is Russell. So you can come up to me and say Brad or whatever, and I'll say, well, you know, like, whatever, like, Brad's not here. So I don't break character, and I don't even know what I'm going to say or what I'm going to do. And it really just kind of gives me the freedom to truly be, like, who I would, you know, normally be. Just in a business sense, you just kind of got to be, you know, professional. So there's been clients when I come in with the long hair and the hat on and the sunglasses and, like, face paint and change, you know, my verbiage and stuff. They don't really know, you know, who I am. So, and then the best thing is we've had clients come in and wearing wigs and, you know, short shorts, and it's kind of one of those deals. I tell people it's not like Vegas. It's like you kind of got to book a hunt and come to see everything, because would never put all that on Facebook, now, Instagram, Snapchat, or whatever. It's kind of like you got to book a hunt to kind of see what's happening here, and it's pretty comical. Now, it's honestly, it's really, really fun to do.
Yeah. Now, well, another honor that not everybody gets to have at the Pro Outfitter Lodge, and I am a part of it, and Matt just pulled it up here. If you miss up there, they've got a wall that you got to hang your shirt tail on. Well, I missed a snow goose at like 10 yards.
5 yards.
Yeah.
Three times.
Yeah.
So yeah. I got basically a whole shirt. Like, they cut the whole
sleeve off
my
of
shirt and hung it up there because it was just terrible. And it was what made it so bad was it was on the ground the first shot. And I got up, and I didn't even get out of my layout blind. I just kind of leaned up and kind of leaned back, which I'm not making excuses. I just plain missed it. And I shot, boom, I missed it. It took off flying. I shot two more times, missed it both times. Austin stands up, turns around, boom, kills it deader than a hammer. And everybody's watching me, you know, and that was the joke of the day all day long. So if you miss up there, you get to be on the wall of shame.
Yeah, it's kind of funny when it's maybe a turkey or, you know, like a duck or something that, like, you missed a single or something.
Yeah.
But it's kind of bittersweet on both ends for a deer. It's like, oh, man.
Hey, you know, I've been on that side of the deal, too. We just watched. I missed one, was it 2 years ago, opening day?
Yeah.
And I missed him at 23 yards. I mean, it was just pathetic. And people are like, you're going to put that on the show? Like, you guys are going to air that? I'm like, yeah, you know, people miss. That's just part of it. So it's been on there.
That's real life. And guys will say that with turkeys, like, how do you miss a turkey? I'm like, well, you haven't turkey hunted long enough. If you haven't missed a bird, then you haven't turkey hunted long enough.
Right.
So it happens to
everybody.
You know, to everybody. So it is fun. That's some of the best parts about the lodge atmosphere is just all that. And you guys know from being there a couple times, you just never know who else is going to be there. Now, some of those may be some celebrity or some doctor. You don't know. It's just kind of a melting pot of all these personalities. And we've had multiple people come in and be like, well, I switched my insurance or my investments, or they were, you know, coming back the same time that they didn't know each other 3 days ago. And now, you know, they're, you know, going to come back and book a hunt together. And we've had instances, like, we have some guys from New Orleans that were literally there deer hunting and they were talking. And two guys from two different groups were there bow hunting with us. They lived in the same subdivision one street over and never knew each other and came to our lodge to hunt.
You guys
know this. The hunting industry is just such a small, it's just so small anyway. So.
Yeah. The last time we was there, we got the pleasure of meeting all the Web City boys, you know. We had Brad's buddies in camp, buddy. I'll tell you what, them guys, some of the best food, though.
Yeah.
He brought some pickles or something that were just, man. But, yeah. I mean, they're There's something else, like in the bathrooms, and I'll tell this story. It's just,
it was
I'll keep
good.
It as PG as I can. They in the bathrooms, in the men's bathrooms, they got shower curtains in front of each of the toilets, but they're sitting across from each other.
Yeah, there's like little stalls.
Oh, I come in there one morning, and the two brothers, and I, for the life of me, I can't remember their names.
Adam and Justin.
Adam and Justin. Yeah. They're sitting across from each other with the curtains open, just talking like, and I come in there, and he's like, oh, man, you don't have to shut the curtain. It's fine. We're all friends. Yeah. And I'm like, dude, I'm not crapping in front of you guys. It's just weird. But that's just how they, it was just the whole, those guys were a blast. I mean, there was, in the other guys was from Michigan or Minnesota. I mean, that's another thing. You got guys coming from everywhere to come hunt with you guys.
Yeah, I think the group that came in the day we were leaving was from Michigan.
Michigan or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, it is a melting pot. And that was cool because those were the guys I've, you know, grew up with and been friends with since I was 10 years old. And you know, and for them to come up is always cool. And then you just meet, like I tell people, it's like, I could go about anywhere in the country and be within probably less than 200 miles of clients anywhere. And I think that's like the coolest thing that I'll, you know, post that I'm wherever, I'm in Florida or something, be like, man, you should have stopped by. And I'm like, I know, but I was, you know, there with my family just driving through. And so the people that you meet, and I tell people this, is just so amazing to where if you grew up in an area and you didn't really move out of that area or travel, you can't explain it, but like the friends and the family I've made in the Southeast Nebraska, Northwest Missouri area, and then clients that come in from all over, it is truly just like just the coolest thing that I can't even put into words just how cool it is. And that you get to chat with them and see them on social media, and you feel like you know that, you know, their kids and their family and the things that they're doing. So it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, another guy that you've had hunt with you a couple times, and I kind of like to, I'm going to try to get a hold of him and get him on the, was Steve, and I can't remember his last name, but he has the hunt grounds or whatever that is.
Oh, Stephen Fuller. Fuller. Yeah, Fuller's a friend of mine. Yeah.
I need to get him on here because he's kind of, I think guys would really like to, he took a piece of ground and kind of made it all on his own, like did the, and I think that, what am I trying to say here? He took a piece of ground and made it, like a the best he could for whitetail hunting in our neck of the woods. Because now, is he in southern Missouri or is he in northern Arkansas?
He's in southern Missouri and in Arkansas. He kind of has on both sides. So he's down by like Siloam Springs, Mack County, kind of that, you know, that area. But he kills some great deer. P. Ridge, yep. And he is truly like one of the most humble and nicest guys. And I think, you know, everybody talks about the hunting industry, like some of the hunting celebrities, quote unquote, personalities are not all nice, but he is one of the most down to earth and nicest guys that you will, you'll ever meet. And I just found like with, in general, if you treat people with respect or nice to them, then it's kind of really hard for them to be a butt to you. So I think sometimes when people think if so-and-so is not very nice, it might be that they might give off that vibe, but if you're kind of giving off the same vibe, then they're probably just not going to change the way they are. But He is extremely, extremely nice, and he's a super, super nice guy. So, I'll text you his number.
Yeah,
and you definitely can text him or call him because he'll be on for sure.
Yeah, and I think I'd like to talk to him a little because he's, you know, he hunts in the same crap we hunt, like rolling hills and woods. Right. You know, he isn't on a 1,000-acre bean field.
Yeah,
somewhere.
We're not up north like Brad.
Well, like them guys that get to hunt those big crop fields, it's like not even fair. You know, we got to go out here and find an acorn tree that hopefully still got 3 acorns on it, and we could try to kill a deer off of it.
We go up there, I'm like, Austin, don't just cut across, buddy. This is mud.
And
this
I tell you what really sucks this year, because you guys can still put mineral and stuff out up there, right, Brad?
Mm-hmm. Yep,
see, down here where we're at, because of the CWD crap, we can't even put a mineral site out. Like that's how I always took my inventory and stuff during the summer.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Dump a bag of corn out by a salt block. And then when it got close to deer season, obviously you didn't have the corn out there anymore, but you could still hunt the mineral site if you wanted to.
Right.
But now, you know, it's tough. Like, I've been focusing on the ponds now because it's been so hot and dry. And I know you guys are getting all the rain up there. We're not.
We are, for sure.
Now, which is good for you guys. I mean, it's awesome that it's been just, like, hanging up there.
Right.
For whatever reason, at Lake of the Ozarks, it just, like, goes around us. And I don't know what we did.
It either goes north of 70 or south of 44, and we get none of the rain.
So I planted this food plot, like, 3 weeks ago because it said it was going to rain. It literally rained 5 miles north of me and 5 miles south of me. And we got like a tenth of an inch.
TJ, we need to clarify something. No,
not all of Missouri is under the CWD.
Well, no, that's because Brad, where he's at, they can still put mineral and stuff out there. It's just right here. And we didn't even have a case in Camden County. It was Pulaski or somewhere close to us.
A county that we touched, there was like one case.
Which I'm
going to
be real honest, and we've talked about this before on the podcast. I really think it's all a bunch of BS because these deer, has anybody ever put a camera on a licking branch and seen how many deer go up there?
I totally agree. That's
and
a great
it's
point,
in the wild. I mean, you're worried about a salt block, them nose touching. Have you ever seen a licking branch? There's 25 deer that use that thing.
Yeah, and there's not like dedicated drinking stalls at the pond.
No, and let's be honest, when they're breeding and stuff, they're all over each other. I mean, it's just, I really don't understand it. And I mean, I like the MDC and then sometimes I don't. There's some things that are just completely stupid in my mind, but the worst part about it is they're never going to change it back. I feel like once they've got it like that, we're just, you know, they're never going to be like, okay, you guys can start putting your mineral back out.
Right
now, thankfully for me, there's cows where I'm at. So if the farmer throws if there's a salt block out there, it's not my fault.
Right.
I mean, I can't help it. I may have to stick a camera just to keep an eye on the cows.
Hey.
Right. For sure.
So it is what it is. But me and Matt went for a drive last night, and I'm just now kind of starting to see the bucks coming out into the fields and stuff. So I don't know what they've been doing in my neck of the woods for the past month, because usually you could go see them of an evening, and we haven't been.
Right.
And now we went last night and probably seen, 10 or 15 bucks?
At least, yeah.
You know, within a half a mile of where I can hunt at, because that's my thing. I'm going to drive wherever and see big bucks, but I like to look at the ones that I have a chance at hunting. So
that's better than me. I've seen one doe in 3 weeks.
Well, okay, dang. So I go and buy these two new Reconyx, I wish, Tacticam trail cam. I bought the Reveal X. I bought two of them.
Yep.
I've put them out, and I've got three deer pictures. But I got a cool bobcat picture the other day.
Right. And the crows.
The crows, man, have been celebrities on there. And the coons. And one red-tailed hawk. But the deer, I don't know, man. I got a
critter the other morning about 3:30. I can't tell what it is.
Chupacabra.
That's what it is.
That's what I thought. All I can see is eyeballs lit up and it's all black.
Chupacabra.
Could be a Bigfoot.
So, Brad,
if you need somebody else too, Brian, I'm a friend with him. He's moved on up. I think he's VP of sales now with Tacticam. He's from Louisiana. He's well spoken and knows everything about trail cameras. If you decide that you want someone on there, he'd be great. I'll send you his number too.
Yeah, for sure. Because
I'd really get a cut, because now over the next year, everyone that's going to be on there's going to. I'm maybe had a play in that. I'm just kidding.
No,
but I do know. Hey. If you run out of people, whatever, I do have.
We need all the people we can get.
Okay, that would be a real good one, because there's a lot of people that uses the Tacticam. Oh, I started using them about 6 months ago, and really fell in love with
them. Me and Matt literally just bought some last week because and I know you was associated with Spy Point at one time, and
for 10 years.
I had one, and man, I've had nothing but problems with it, and I've talked to a lot of people, and you either get one or the other with those. It's either never have a problem with it, or it never works.
And I think you're right.
Which I know Spy Point, and the one I got was in the earlier comings of the cell camera thing. You know, I've had it for 5 or 6 years now, and I'm not saying that they're new or improved. Probably isn't better, but everybody I've talked to that's had the Tacticams, nobody's had a problem with them. And I've talked to quite a few people about them.
Yeah, and I was with Spy Point for 10 years, so and my contract was up the end of December. And so two of my buddies that I worked with, because I was employed by Spy Point, went to work for Tacticam. And they're like, hey, man, we need to get you some cameras. And I was like, I don't want to be that guy.
Right.
They're like, hey, I switched, and this is what you need to buy. So I just ordered 6 cameras online, and we started running them. And I sent my friend Jacob, and I was like, I sent the picture. I'm like, dude, man, these Tacticams are awesome. He's like, where did you get them? I go, I ordered them online. I think I ordered them at Bass Pro or Cabela's. I go, I don't really remember. He's like, well, what'd you pay for them? I go, regular price. He goes, well, I'd hook you up. I go, no, I didn't want to be that guy.
Right.
I just wanted to try them and then go from there. So I ran them for I think I bought them in January, and then started sending some pictures in March or April. And then he's like, man, then he hooked us up, and we're a dealer for him now and all that kind of stuff. But I didn't want to be that guy that, you switch from one bow manufacturer, something else, and this is the biggest and the best. I wanted to kind of do my own research, and just the picture quality and the way that they set up and everything, I haven't had any issues at all, and really impressed. And everyone that I know kind of have the same, the same success rate that we've had with them.
I think it's the SK, the solar power model.
Yes.
Dude, I don't think I'd ever go back. I mean, there's nothing wrong with the lower, I'm going to call them lower end tachycams or not.
Right.
But the solar power panel one, that's my favorite one so far.
That's mine. Yeah.
Well, I mean, let's face it. If you put decent batteries in them, they take 12 batteries.
Yeah.
They're not cheap. I mean, you're putting $25 worth of batteries in this thing.
I know.
Well, TJ, on the solar panel, when you get a lithium pack with it and you charge it for 2 or 3 hours, I haven't had to even go test it in 6 months.
Yeah. Well, ours, see, we've got the Reveal X, I think, and it's compatible with the solar panel. I think you can buy it separate.
Yeah. Because
me and Matt, was like 30 bucks or something for the panel.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to save that the first time you don't put batteries in it. I mean,
it's worth it.
And it's just so cool to think of how far trail cameras have come. Yeah. I mean, honestly, when I was little, I remember going with my uncle, and I mean, I was little, and we'd check his trail camera and we'd have to take it to Walmart and have the film developed.
Yeah.
Like it had an actual camera in there.
Yeah.
And you know, now they're sending them to our cell phone.
Yeah. It is crazy. I mean,
My first couple of years of guiding, I can remember doing that, you know, and I tell people this, like when I first started guiding, not everybody had a cell phone. So we had two-way radios.
Yeah.
And then I'd have like a rag or something. And if your rag, you know, if I can see your rag and it's tied to the tree, I know that you're hunting all day. If I don't see your rag, then I know that you're coming out at lunch. Because I got to wear the two-way radios, you'd be like, TJ, you coming out? And you'd be like, you know, breaking up like, no, I'm staying. And it would be like, you're coming. So it's amazing just how
I don't know how we ever killed any deer without any hunt naps.
Yeah.
You know, like how did we ever go out there and shoot a deer without knowing exactly where the wind's blowing? But now that we're so spoiled now, though, now you're like, oh, I can't hunt that stand because you're looking at your hunt stand or you're on X and you're like, it's like, man, how did you?
My personal favorite, which I'm not knocking anybody, but is the deer cast, right?
Yeah.
There is guys that live and die by that. I'm like, brother, you just got to go out there and hunt.
Well, I've told you about Dan Infault, the hunting beast.
Yeah, yeah.
That guy, he said, you got all these guys that are scared to death nowadays to go in and hunt a big buck because everybody's telling him, like, you can't get close to him. You got to stay. He's like, dude, just go in there and shoot the damn thing. He's like, get close to it, as close as you can, without, obviously, be smart.
Right.
Use the wind. But if you know that deer's bedding in there, go get on the outside edge of it and kill him. Like, it's not, they're not as smart as we. Now, you can educate them and make them very smart.
Right.
But if they don't know you're there, you can do, and I'm no good at it. Obviously, I haven't shot a nice buck since I picked up a video camera. So like me and Matt both killed really nice deer. And then we jumped on board with Matt Smith and them and bought cameras and we're going to do this whole TV show thing. And just like that, it's like everything just goes wrong when you get a camera. Now, Brad, you had a TV show for a little while too, didn't you?
Yeah, I had a couple. I had one called Lodge Life. It was like in 2009, 10. It was on like the Pursuit Channel and stuff. And then I had one 2011 to 13 that was called The Quest. And that was on like all of the local outlets. And
it was on the same channel stuff that we were on.
Yeah. That's a lot of work. I loved it. And people asked if I'd go back to it. Between the outfitting and that,
I don't know how really you could. I don't know how you could do it, man. I mean,
it was too much. And then I tell people this, I got to where I never thought I'd ever say this for a few years. I didn't like hunting. It was a job.
Right.
Like, hey, well, you can't shoot that deer because that's low light. The moon phase is perfect. We got to go hunt. And you just felt like that you just really couldn't just, like what you're saying, just go hunt. Yeah. Obviously, we hunt the wind. And I don't honestly deer hunt much anymore. I want to, but my son is like in that perfect age where he's ate up with it. I feel like every chance I get to go, I go with him, and he's now like the app and the social media guru, and he'll tell me stuff. I'm like, hey, the wind is perfect. We're going to hunt,
right?
And I've tried to get him to understand that as long as the wind is right, you're right. I'm very, which is kind of on certain things. I'm very aggressive when it comes to hunting. If the wind is right, you go kill that buck. Don't look at some the moon phase or look at some app that tells you that, well, I it's 2 o'clock and this was a hot time, so I guess I need to climb down from the stand. Right. That's bull crap. Just go hunt.
Well, I mean, how many times have you walked to your tree stand in the middle of the day and the deer already be there? You just don't never know, especially during like the rut and stuff. Guys, I mean, it's tough, but if you can sit all day, I mean, that's the key to it.
Here's the secret I use, TJ, when I'm going to mine blind or whatever. I always put a cell camera there, so if I know something's there before I get there, it's telling me.
Right. Well, I just literally had gotten cell cameras last week. That's how far behind. I mean, I had the one for a while.
I tell you what, though, when you're good like us and you sneak in the rain.
Oh, man. So last year, you guys
do the Mohican sneak. Huh?
Well, we did.
All right. So I told Matt, I was like, dude, I've had this big old 10-pointer. He had a little 3 or 4 inch drop tine. And I've been chasing him all year. And I mean, I got so close to this deer 3 or 4 times. And I'm like, Matt, we're going in on him. I went in there. I put a ground blind up right in his bedding area. And I mean, we were 75 yards from where this deer was laying. I mean, that's how much I knew about this deer.
Right.
And it's pouring down rain. And I told Matt, I was like, dude, we got to go now. And he's like, yeah, I know. I was like, we got to get in there while it's raining. Because I said, we'll never get past him if we don't. So we're sneaking down in there, $1,500 worth of camera equipment, and it's pouring down rain. And we get to the blind, and Matt goes, whoa, 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 stop. This thing is bedded, what, 25, 30 yards from our ground blind.
Yeah.
Not the buck we were after, but another 8-pointer. And Matt's like, what do we do? And I was like, dude, it's going to quit raining. We're going to get caught with our pants down. We got to get in that blind. So we literally tiptoed, unzipped the blind, get in this blind, get all the camera stuff set up with this deer laying. I mean, that's how hard it was raining and the wind and stuff. Got in the blind, set up, and it quit raining. And then it wasn't 10 minutes later, doe comes over the hill, big buck's right behind her. And he 75 yards the whole time. And I'm like, man, it's going to happen. Like, Matt's like, yeah, we had like 35, 40 minutes of footage of this deer. And a bobcat come running over the hill and run him off. And I mean a little bitty bobcat. It was like a house cat bobcat. And I think that was the last time I seen him with his horns. Because I seen him late season, but he shed his horns, which I found both of them. I just found the other one like last week. Well, I didn't, but the landowner did. But it was just, you know, it was crazy that we was able to sneak in there like that. But I had enough because
I'm a little bitty guy. I sneak real easy.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, Matt's real. We're none of us are all that small anymore. You know, I guess I'm probably the smallest guy out of the group. And I'm creeping up on 200, so, you know, that's just, but it's, the filming thing, though, is really cool. Like, this last year, I got to film my little boy, Drake, kill his first deer, and I'm always going to have that, and I think that's what, you know, everybody's like, oh, it's so much work, but it is, but when it works, it's, like, the most rewarding thing in the world. Now, we've killed some deer on film. We had an awesome turkey season this year. Me and Matt both did. Hampton killed a bird.
You won't see my kill though. It didn't make it on TV.
Yeah, he has a problem with pushing record.
Hey, I ain't gonna say nothing. I got my son killed his first turkey this year, and it was kind of a wild hunt. Bird spooked, bird came back, and I didn't hit record the second time.
Yeah. It happens,
so
man.
He kills his first gobbler, and I don't have any of that on film. But
if you film long enough, it's gonna happen to you.
Good cameramen are hard to find.
Well, that's
especially my... Especially if you don't want to pay them. They're, like, impossible to find.
Right, yeah. Well, Hampton, that's my problem. I'm not a good cameraman. I'm just a good hunter.
Yeah. You're pretty decent camera guy.
I'm neither one, so I'm in a wrong situation.
It's just hard when you're working a full-time job to both of us get on the same page where we can hunt together.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that. Well, that turkey hunt, that filming turkey hunts is so much fun. And filming your kids or taking your kids turkey hunt, I love the deer hunting. I love it all. But my kids have, since they were 5 years old, have been obsessed with turkey hunting. And it has been the coolest thing. Like, my daughter doesn't care to kill anything but turkeys. Right. And I think she's killed, 17 now or something. Yeah, because my son's killed 18. And that's all she does. She doesn't want to kill anything else. And my son this year decided he wanted to do it all by himself. So we live in the country, and then my uncle and I have a bunch of ground behind our house, and it's taken us about 5 years to get some turkeys back there. And the past couple of years, we've seen 2 or 3 toms, and we had about 5 this year. they were back there. So before I left to go up north, I set him a blind up back there and had walked him through everything. Of course, he's, you know, hunted his whole life. So it's kind of first time turkey hunting by himself. So I'm with my daughter in the blind, and my son's, you know, giving me a play-by-play, like, hey, Dad, like, there's two birds that are gobbling on the limb. What do I need to do? I'm like, okay, remember, we've been practicing calling, you know, there's a little tree yelping and all this. So the first day he has a bird come in, and it's like noon or so, and comes in to like 50 yards, and it's a little far for him, and, you know, he's got a hen and kind of goes off. And so he goes back out to eat that evening, kind of same thing. And so that next morning, he texts me, and he's like, hey, that same bird, he's gobbling again. What do I do? I said, we'll call a little more. So when he hits the ground, just, you'll call pretty aggressive. And he got the same thing, got to like 50 or 60 yards and had a hen. And I was sitting there thinking, I was like, crap, it just hit me. I was like, I love hunting over like stuffers, like a strutter decoy. Mm-hmm. And I was like, crap, Grayson. I go, do you have the strutter out? He's like, no, you didn't tell me I could use it. I'm like, oh, crap, it's in the garage. I said, run up to the garage, get it, put it back out in front of the blind, wait about an hour and call. So he waits about an hour, and he goes, I'm all set up, Dad. And so he starts calling, you know, the bird gobbles, and he gobbles again. I said, all right, he's coming. And then it was about 5 minutes later, he calls me, and he goes, I killed him. And this is Sunday. Now, mine just was like Sunday, and my daughter already killed, and I'm like, hey, if you want me to drive home, I plan on staying the whole turkey season at the lodge. My wife is going to meet me to pick up my daughter in Kansas City. He's like, I'll drive home, and I'll take you this evening. He's like, nope, I told you, I'm bound and determined to kill my first bird by myself. So we got that established. So then he sets the strutter out, you know, midday, and the bird's gobbling and everything. And he texts me, and he goes, he's gobbling his head off. I go, okay, just shut up. He's going to come. He's going to come. And 5 minutes later, he goes, I killed him. I go, man, I mean, that was like the most sickening but awesome feeling that it all came together. And I told him, I'm like, man, I got to come home. Like, you killed this turkey. I got to come home and see it. So he goes, oh, it's not the big bird. And he sent me a picture, and it looked like a pretty good bird. And so I get home, and I kind of lay in the garage. I'm like, hey, we'll clean it in a little bit. I want to go inside from that. I come back out, and I start looking. I was like, man, that's a good bird. It was 26 and a half pounds, inch and a half bird.
Yeah. Not that good. It isn't that big. You know?
And so here's the best part of the story. So this is kind of, I'll keep it short, but last September 3rd, my son's best friend passed away from cancer. So I can't imagine being a 12-year-old and your best friend passing away. So last year, he just spent a lot more time in the woods. And we had a lot of conversations. I'm like, hey, man, my dad died at 17. It was tough. And I felt like when I was in the woods, that's when I felt closest to him. I could just go out there. I could talk to him and do all that. I never really felt comfortable going out to his graveside. It just didn't feel real because we loved to hunt and stuff. Mm-hmm. I said, so you might find that's kind of, you know, that's kind of your place. So he got to where he was hunting all day behind the house, and he'd see a few deer, but mainly you could just tell he was just getting away. So I get back, and I said, well, tell me the story. He goes, well, I'm sitting there, and he goes, I told you the bird was gobbling and everything. And he goes, he got up early that morning and hunted all that. And he goes, Dad, I fell asleep. And okay, he goes, I woke up, and the turkey was on top of the decoy flogging it. And he goes, I grabbed my gun and shot it. And I literally got goosebumps. I go, dude, that's your buddy Christian up there watching over you. I go, yeah. I've hunted my whole life. And I go, the chances of a big tom turkey coming in, flogging your decoy and knocking it down and standing on top of it and not spooking are slim to none.
Yeah.
So he's like, are you serious? I'm like, yeah. So it was just a really cool deal that he got to kill a turkey by himself. But then the whole story behind it, like, you fell asleep and you woke up. So the biggest turkey that I haven't killed a turkey that big. The biggest turkey we've killed flogging a decoy, that's the man upstairs and your best friend had something to do with that. So it turned out to be a pretty cool story. So,
yeah. And we had a lot of success with a male turkey decoy this year. And I think that's what a lot of people, they get caught up on having a hen. Honestly, I think you're better off with like a Jake or a strutting if you're on private property.
Yeah.
Exactly. We use the crap out of them. And some guys are like, man, do those really work? I'm like, they really do.
Well, here's the deal. It's either going to work or it's not. Like with a hen decoy, it might work and they'll come in a little ways and then hang up. Because we're trying to do things all backwards, you know, than what it is in the wild.
Yep. Yeah.
So, like, if you got a hen, he might come within where he thinks, well, she can see me. I'm going to stay right here. Now, if you've got another tom out there, he's going to be like, well, who's that? You know, or he's going to be like, oh, no, I got to get out of here. Now, that happens too.
Right.
But
But when they commit and come running in ready to fight, that's
buddy, you can pretty much go out there and knock them in the head with a baseball bat. I mean, I've seen them that committed. I shot a bird this year with my bow, and the other one just, it's amazing that, like, they go from buddies to hating each other just that quick. Like, you shoot him, and he's flocking around, and then you just, the other one just comes up there and jumps on him, and it's like, dude, you guys were friends five minutes ago. Now you're trying to kill him.
Hey, it's kind of like us in high school when you're drinking beer with your buddies, right?
Right, yeah. You get one girl in between
one
the two of you.
And the next minute you're drunk fighting him, and five minutes later you're hugging.
Yeah, you're like, oh, man, I'm sorry. You know, she's not worth it. I mean, it's just...
Exactly.
It's how it is. It's just a crazy, crazy... The turkey hunting thing, which you guys... Do you guys just hunt... do you hunt any Merriams up there in Nebraska, or you guys don't hunt far enough north?
We do have Merriams. It's mainly kind of hybrid. But we're getting to where they're migrating more easterly. But, you know, if you look at Nebraska's Game and Fish, they'll say that, like, I think there's now just, like, two counties that are pure Merriams. We'll kill about two or three. So we go back from the lodge about a little over an hour west, and we're getting now to where we consistently, you know, we'll kill a handful every year. It used to be, like, one or two. We're seeing more migrate farther east all the time.
Yeah. See, that's something that we've all talked about maybe next year coming up and trying to hunt.
You'd love it.
I'd like to kill something. You know, everybody wants to kill something different. You know, like kill a Merriam turkey. Yeah. Or like me and Matt was talking on the way over here. Man, I'd really like to go shoot a mule deer somewhere. I don't care how big it is. Yeah. I just would like to go shoot, which I know in Nebraska they got mule deer too. I figure the far western, northwestern parts I've heard is the better place, but.
It is, yeah.
You know, but they got mule deer in Kansas. A lot of people don't realize that.
Right, they do. Yeah, some big ones too.
I mean, it, but you know, just something different. Well, that's old Missouri boys. You know, and there's people down south that are like, man, I wish I could go kill a big old whitetail buck, you know, or kill a big eastern turkey, you know. And then here we are, like, we just want to. I mean, obviously, our dream hunt would be like a Yukon moose or something crazy,
right? Yeah,
but you know, one of these days I'm gonna kill something out west. That's my plan, and. Uh-huh. Because I've been everywhere. My grandpa was a pilot for Delta Airlines for a long time, so I got to go to a lot of different places. And I've been to Homer, Alaska. I've been to Colorado. I've been almost all the... I went to California. I didn't leave nothing there, so I haven't been back. I've been a lot of places, but I've only got to hunt. The only out-of-state hunting I've done was in Texas. And my grandparents owned... some property down there, and I take that back, and Arkansas. We killed some geese in Arkansas.
Yeah.
I went on I killed a couple hogs down in Texas on my grandparents' place before they sold it, but that's it. You know, I haven't got to hunt. I've fished other places, but I haven't got to hunt. So, you know, I'm hoping that one of these days I'll be able to branch out and do something cool like that.
The
turkey hunting thing, I definitely think we need to get with Brad and try to figure out. And like I said, these guys, Matt and Justin, would have a blast up there coming up and hanging out and trying to film a show up there. You know, that's what we're trying to get this thing kicked off. You know, we're doing pretty good with the YouTube and stuff, and we're kind of kicking around the Gen 7 idea. Just anything that we can do to get out there. I feel like in today's world, like, everybody's focused so much on the Sportsman Channel and stuff, but really more people watch it on YouTube and the other platforms,
other
now,
streaming services and stuff. Yeah.
And it is so, you know, it's so expensive to be on those other things. People don't realize that. Now, if you've got all kinds of cool sponsors and stuff to get you through there, it's not such a big deal. But,
well, I think that the beauty with you guys is, I would say that, like, age, I mean, there's obviously huge benefits of being older. And when I talk to younger guys, like, when we talked earlier about, like, our group meetings, the guides and stuff, and they'll be like, well, if you do Snapchat, it's going to take a long time to build it. But what you guys just said is, I think what sometimes is lost in anything is we see whoever you would want to be, whether that's the Drury's or Lee and Tiffany or whatever, people are like, well, how do I become there? And it's like, I'm getting better every day. So I say that. So every new client, every new follower, every new viewer that you have or whatever, that's how you really build it. But I think a lot of people just think that it has to happen so fast. So if you're doing it the right way, which you guys are, just putting, you know, all your time, all your effort into it, but not necessarily thinking that, like, man, we only grew and have, you know, 50 new followers this month. Well, that's not really success. Well, it is. It's just, it's growth. It just might not be at the
overnight
the speed that, like everyone would want, because that's the only thing that's the problem with our culture is anything. It's everybody like, well, how do I get to be that person? How do I get to be Mark Drury? How do I get to be Alex Rutledge? How do I get to be Freddie King? Man, those are, they're all old guys. It took them 30 or 40
right.
years.
And they're not, they don't realize how long these people had to work at this thing to get to where they're at. They don't realize all the work that people, you know, have had to pour into this. Now, some of them people started off really good and now have kind of gotten lost in the hunting industry and are getting a little bit, a little bit too much. Like, you know, like the Lee and Tiffany thing. I'm be honest, I'm burnt out on the whole sitting on a 300-acre bean field shooting 200-inch deer, like, every time you go out there. It just, it's not realistic. And we talk about it all the time, like, why the hunting public is such a hit now.
Right.
Because people can relate to it.
Yeah, everybody can go hunt public ground.
Well, yeah, everybody can go buy them a tree saddle, climb up in the public land, and kill them a 125-inch buck if you try real hard. And that's what them guys are doing. And they've really blowed up because people are like, man, I like watching that. You would think, like, these guys shooting 200-inch deer used to, that was like, oh, man. But now it's like, yeah, well, he's got all this stuff that I'm never going to have. I'm not interested in that. And I think that's kind of where the hunting industry is kind of getting towards the – and that's why I think you see a lot of guys pushing, like, the public land thing is because people eat it up.
Well, and it's real people, so I'm not saying that Lee and Tiffany and some of those – I'm not bashing anyone. It's not real. But some of those came from opportunities that those people wouldn't have. So they can buy that platform, and that gives them a huge starting, you know, jump start that most people don't have. But with that, they're doing it for all the wrong reasons. Like, you guys are going to hunt, fish, enjoy the outdoors, whether you're doing a TV show, a podcast, or whatever. No matter if I sold Pro Outfitters, decided not to do it or whatever, I'm in it because I love to hunt. I love the people. I think that's what sifts through, you know, some of that to where over time, people see that. They see the real emotions of these are just normal guys that have a passion for the outdoor, like to share whatever tips they have. Maybe they fumble on words. Maybe everything's not perfection. Maybe they don't, you know, look like they just got out of, you know, a GQ magazine. I think that's where it went. And I think now it's kind of circled back around to where that's not normal. That's not what us country boys and all of us grew up. That's, I don't want to use the terms out with city people because I'm not bashing anyone at all. But there was a lot of that movement that wasn't even true that people were like, you know, they would ask about certain people. I know I'm like, I can tell you this much. That person wasn't getting paid. They wouldn't pick up the bow and they wouldn't go hunt.
No.
And we all know a lot of those people. We
don't have Matthews or Hoyt telling us, hey, you need to go kill something because we need it on TV.
Right.
You know? Well, I mean, I have a Matthews, but I don't have to. It just kills. You just take it out of the box, man, and pew, dead. You should know that by now, Hampton. You just, if you've got a Matthews, you just wave it out the window and they fall over.
They do, yeah.
Or they break apart when you pull them back.
I haven't had, I've had that same one since 2005 and it still hasn't broke apart.
Right.
I haven't even put a new string on it.
That's how bad it is. You've been watching too many TikToks on Matthews Bows, what that is.
Yeah, I guess. I keep hoping for that sponsorship to come in the mail.
Exactly.
And that's another thing about us. We don't have like a whole bunch. We kind of got away from the whole sponsor thing because it was just, you couldn't, you know, like if we like a certain kind of, if you like to hunt with a broadhead, like we all hunt with Muzzies, me and Matt do.
Yeah. Yep.
And somebody else might want to hunt with something else. Well, if you're sponsored by Muzzy, you don't really want to be, you're not really pushing the product for them. So we're just like, you know what? Let's just be real. Let's just hunt with whatever you want to hunt with. I mean, we give each other crap about Justin shooting a PSC, but it really don't matter. They're all good bows nowadays. So
we kind of
stepped away from the sponsor thing, which I realize that, you know, sponsors help, you know, help with the TV show and certain things. And I, when I say sponsors, I mean like local businesses and stuff that I have no problem with. But it's the product pushing thing, I think, is.
Well, and I think the hunting industry as a whole kind of gets a bad rap for
the product,
you know, certain
thing.
Shows maybe,
but,
you know, just pushing.
Yeah. I agree. I think people are like, man, but, that's all phony baloney. I don't want to hear that. They'd rather
But we
just,
do. we do have, I'll call them friends in the outdoor industry that gives us
right.
discounts and stuff uh-huh. like that. Yeah. You know, they yeah. don't, they're not necessarily wanting us to push the product, but they want us to use it, but they'll give us a good enough discount we can.
Well, and here's another thing. Right. If somebody gives me something and I use it and I like it and it works, then I'll tell everybody yeah. about it. But if somebody gives me something yeah. that's a piece of crap, I'm not going to, just because you give it to me, I'm not going to tell everybody how good it is. If it's junk, I'm going to say, man, I wouldn't buy that.
Right.
You know, yeah. and I think that people appreciate that. You know, I think they like it when you're honest about something. And but you got to do it in a way to where you're not, you don't sound like a jerk. And that's a fine line there. You could be like, you know, it just didn't work like I thought it would. It's not for me. You know, and I know people are so sensitive nowadays that, you know, they might lose their minds if you tell them their product's junk because they probably worked their whole life to build this thing.
Right. Hey, exactly. I have done that and it don't go over well.
Yeah.
Yeah, it usually doesn't. Yeah.
Well, but what are you going to do? I mean, there's no nice way of telling somebody their stuff's junk.
Yeah, right.
Well, if you're a product owner and you're wanting me to use it, and you want my honest opinion, and I don't think it's working, it's junk. I mean, plain and simple, it's junk. It don't work. Right. You know, go back to
I mean, if you're really trying to make something and do something with it, you want some people telling you what's wrong with it, because then you can fix
yeah.
it.
Yeah, some honest feedback.
You know, if everybody's just praising you on how good you are at stuff, then they're probably lying to you, first of all, because nobody's perfect. Like this whole TV show thing we're doing. You know, obviously half the stuff we do is not perfect. You know, I've had a lot of hunts that I didn't get the shot on perfect on film, but we didn't go back and edit anything. We just like, hey, next time we need to do this different because right. that didn't work.
Throw another GoPro up or something, but we're not going to go back and fake it.
Yeah, we're not going to go back and refilm it the next day where everybody's like, boy, it wasn't sunny whenever they were hunting out there. Now it's sunny. It gets like when they start doing that kind of stuff or when you walk up on a deer and it looks like it just fell asleep right there. Let's be honest, yeah. people. We've seen dead deer. They don't look like that. And I get, like, especially on YouTube and stuff nowadays.
Because everybody's so sensitive.
You can't go up there and have the guts hanging out of this thing. You know, you got to have some respect for the animal. Right. I get cleaning her up a little. Because YouTube, buddy, they'll shut you down in a heartbeat now because, you know, we do some snagging shows and you'll snag these fish and they'll bleed like a stuck hog and there's just nothing you can. So some of them we get to use and some of it you don't. That's just part of it. But.
Well, yeah, you know, like right now, I'm filming a trapping show. Well, I can't kill the animal on camera. I mean,
well, you can just don't show you shooting.
Yeah,
you
can't show it.
You gotta be like, well, there he is, and then come back and well, all right, well, we dispatched him. You know, if you used to shoot him on camera, buddy, PETA's gonna be at your doorstep tomorrow.
Oh yeah, and that's another thing. You have to be careful how you word it because you can't say, well, now I'm going to kill this critter because people's going to be on you.
Yeah, you got to say dispatch.
You got to say dispatch.
Yeah. Like it, Matt. Anybody with a brain knows you're going to shoot it in the head. Like, that's just...
right, exactly.
But that's the world we live in. And you know what? We have to adapt to it. If you're going to be in this business, if you're going to try to have a TV show, you've got to go by the guidelines, man. We live in their world whether we like it or not, and... If you want to be on these platforms people are watching, it's like Brad said about TikTok. You know, you can't put dead animals on there. It sucks because it'd be cooler if you could show, like, guys shooting ducks or geese falling or, you know, us guys that are watching it would eat it.
No, wait a minute.
Love it.
Could you put, a snow goose biting a guy in the nose, though?
Oh, my gosh, that was hilarious. I forgot all about that.
Yeah.
Those things are vicious now.
Yeah.
They are. They are vicious. Yeah.
Hey, I bet Zach didn't forget, though.
No, I bet not.
Yeah. Yeah. He hasn't forgot at all.
So. All right, guys. Well, we're rolling in on a lot now. So that's the thing. You get to talking to good people, you talk for days. But Brad, I appreciate you coming on here, man. I can't wait to get up there and do some hunting with you.
I can't either, and it feels like you guys just left. That just tells you how fast.
I know,
it's fine.
Yeah, and it'll always take forever to get here, though. You know, I wish we could come up there and hunt a whole lot, but with our schedule and stuff, you know, we got to try to kill a deer this season, so that's going to take till January 15th. It seems like every year you're like, oh yeah, it's going to go good this year. We're going to get them killed by, it was so funny. Me and Matt used to be like, dude, if we can kill your deer the first weekend and then we'll go film, you kill one the next week, dude, we'll have it. And then here we are in November and we ain't even drew a bow back yet. And it's like, whoa, this is going just exactly as we planned it. Or we'll be like, man, let's just go shoot a doe, you know, get some footage. 4 days later, we're still hunting the same doe.
7 days.
Last year it took me and Matt 7 days to kill a doe. And it was like, oh my gosh, this is bad. But, yeah, you know, that's part of it, and we love it. But
at least you didn't miss two back-to-back last year.
No. I only missed one deer last year. I thought that was pretty good. I mean, granted, it was 150-inch 10-pointer, but I only missed once.
I missed two bucks. I was pissed off and shot a spike and lost him, and I missed a doe.
Well, you're batting so 1,000, man.
I'm telling you.
You're pretty ballsy just admitting that. You know, I mean, I got to give you some props, Justin. Like,
yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Most people would have just said, I didn't see nothing tonight.
Yeah. But I got to go order some more arrows.
Right. I lost an arrow out there. I must have dropped it out of my quiver.
You know, the way I see it, if you have never missed, you haven't hunted long.
Well, you haven't bow hunted very long. I can tell you that for free.
I'd much rather miss and have the opportunities than not have the opportunity at all. That's just my fault.
The missing doesn't bother me. It's the bad shots that bother me, And that happens, too. I mean, you bow hunt long enough, you're going to gut punch one or something. I mean, it's bound to happen.
It was all my fault, too. I mean, I missed every one of them by myself.
Yeah, nobody helped you, huh?
Nope. just a cheap range finder.
Yeah. Well... All right, well, Brad, we're going to definitely have to get you back on here, man,
for sure.
When hunting season gets in full swing. But I appreciate you coming on.
And I'm going to send you some guys too that I think that you might enjoy having on the show too.
Yeah, so that'd be awesome. That would be awesome. So,
Brad, how does everybody find you? The easiest way is honestly probably obviously Facebook if you look at Hunt Pro Outfitters, or our website is huntprooutfitters.com. It has all of our information on there. We do, like everybody does, we do Facebook and Instagram, and now we're doing the whole TikTok thing, and I guess sometime this fall we're going to jump on and do Snapchat too. So, but yeah, obviously our website, because it has the most information. Being that we do three states, it's pretty detailed. It shows what we offer, lets you print off, you know, things that you'll need to bring, shows the pictures and all that kind of stuff. And then the most important thing I tell people on the website, it has Mel's number, which you guys know what amazing job she does. She is really detail oriented. So once you decide that you want to book a hunt, she'll walk you through all the details of logistics of when you show up, when the payments are due, what gear you need.
Trust
all
me,
that kind of
she'll
stuff.
Take care of you, because the whole time, like before, she was texting me like 2 weeks before we come, like, okay, guys, here's what we're doing. This is what you guys need to do. It looks like it's going to be cold. Make sure you wear some clothes. That was something me and you ran into. That's a whole, we'll end up in another rabbit hole. But, guys, it's wintertime. Wear clothes.
Yeah.
No shorts and flip-flops.
Mel, she's the one, like Brad said, she'll take care of you, man. She'll walk you through the whole deal. It's a pretty easy process to go up there and kill stuff with Brad. So, but, man, like I said 100 times now, I appreciate you coming on here tonight, and, once again, everybody, if you're looking to do any deer hunting, turkey hunting, waterfowl hunting, Pro Outfitters, huntprooutfitters.com. The Facebook page is probably one of the – that's pretty much how everybody does anything nowadays, to be honest.
Yep.
And I share their page all the time on my deal.
You do. I appreciate that, yeah.
So if anybody – you know, they're not hard to find, but I really – 5-star in my book for sure. We wouldn't go back if it, I mean, that's just plain and simple. I mean,
right.
If it wasn't a good time, I wouldn't never go back. So I highly recommend them. But, well, guys, I think we're going to wrap her up. We're 1 week closer to bow season. So everybody hang in there. We'll get in there eventually. Well, some here in Missouri. Now, some of you guys are getting even closer, you know.
September 1st in Nebraska, we start. Yeah. We got some velvet hunts we're doing. So, yeah.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
You have my curiosity now. But, all right, guys. Well, we'll talk to you in the next one, and thanks for listening.
The Ozark Traditions TV podcast crew would appreciate it if you leave a 5-star rating and subscribe on your favorite podcast apps so you don't miss an episode. And also, be sure to check out our hunting episodes on our YouTube channel, and don't forget to subscribe. While you're on the web, head on over to our Facebook page and click on the follow and like button to see what the Ozark Traditions TV crew is up to. Ozark Traditions TV would like to thank you for joining in to this week's podcast. Be sure to tune in on our next weekly podcast as we bring the outdoors inside. From all of us at Ozark Traditions TV, we thank you for listening. And remember, if you see us out in God's country, stop us. We'd like to meet you.